From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Next hour, is there a half-man, half-animal running around Wisconsin? Linda Godfrey joins us, and we talk about that and some other creatures. Next hour on Coast to Coast AM. But here's what's happening. A California company has issued a nationwide recall on its romaine lettuce after the lettuce tested positive for salmonella in Wisconsin. No illnesses have been linked to the lettuce. The Wisconsin Department of Agriculture conducted a random test on romaine lettuce from Tanamura and Antel Fresh Foods and found the bacteria. The company also recalled its romaine lettuce distributed in Puerto Rico and Canada. The company said it had notified its customers about the recall, told them to discard any existing product. The voluntary recall affects single whole heads of lettuce with a shelf life of 14 to 16 days after harvest dates from June 25th to July 2nd, according to the company. Osama bin Laden's son isn't the only al-Qaeda operative believed to have been killed now in an attack by an unmanned U.S. drone in the past year. U.S. officials said that Saad bin Laden is not considered a significant player in al-Qaeda leadership. He was collateral damage in an airstrike in Pakistan and was not considered important enough to target on his own. But other high-value operatives, some of whom with key roles in al-Qaeda, apparently have been taken out by U.S. attacks over the past year. More than 40 people, including politicians, officials, and several rabbis, have been arrested in a major FBI operation. Three mayors from the state of New Jersey and two members of the state legislature were among those held. One man is accused of alleged kidney trafficking involving Israeli donors. 300 FBI agents raided dozens of locations in New Jersey and New York as part of a 10-year probe into corruption and money laundering. Slow down, Senate Democrats have told President Barack Obama, dashing hopes of rushing his sweeping health care overhaul to a summertime vote and adding to the troubles the plan could face as the year wears on. No one is suggesting that delay equals defeat yet. In fact, the Senate's top Democrat has promised a bipartisan bill in the next 2 weeks. But President Obama has been pushing hard for quick passage of legislation he can sign to expand coverage, he says, to all Americans and control medical costs. It's not a done deal by any means yet. The U.S. housing market may be on the mend after its most far-reaching collapse in 70 years. That could help rebuild consumer confidence and revive the economy. For the first time in 5 years, sales of previously occupied homes rose for the third consecutive month in June, while foreclosure sales and the glut of homes on the market both declined. Ford Motor Company, by the way, returned to profitability last quarter. It won't last long, though, unless it can boost sales of cars and trucks and continue to grab market share from rivals. But Ford cemented its position as the healthiest U.S.-based automaker by reporting a surprise $2.3 billion net profit in the second quarter, mainly due to $10 billion in debt reductions that cut annual interest payments. Ms. Shedlock on the line with us now. Ms., a couple things. Home sales, first of all. Stock market jumped over 9,000 for the first time since January, and they're all jumping up and down because of the housing market. Is it strong?
I don't think it's strong. What we're seeing is a rebound in things from depressed levels. We are seeing a certain extent the result of banks holding foreclosure sales off. Instead of dumping them on the market, they're kind of holding on to these houses now. That creates a little bit of a vacuum. Some buyers are coming in. They're coming into some markets. There's a chance that some markets have bottomed, but as a national picture as a whole, I don't think so, George.
All right. What about Ford?
Ford, I think that's some genuine good news, but Ford has one problem. And the biggest problem that Ford has is that GM is bankrupt. GM has had a lot of the debt on its books wiped off, balanced clean. Ford is still stuck with that debt, and that means that when...
Didn't get bailout money.
And didn't get bailout money. That's correct. And what that means is that GM in the future is going to have a competitive advantage over Ford. And I don't know. There's going to be a rebound in auto sales too, but I think the economy is going to slip back into a double dip recession, and then that's when Ford's going to get hit.
And now the healthcare plan.
Oh my gosh, the healthcare plan.
Now, on one hand, wouldn't it be great to allow Americans to have some affordable health coverage? That would be great. But problem is, who pays for it? And then you can't force people to take it. They're talking about penalizing people if they don't take it, and companies.
Right.
They're not going at it the right way.
No, that's exactly right. We've talked about this kind of thing before. Now, I wrote a letter on my blog. It's not going to be read. It's kind of like a letter to myself, but it's called An Open Letter to President Obama on Healthcare and the Economy. And, you know, it kind of starts out, "Dear Mr. President, Wednesday evening we heard you address the nation on healthcare and the economy. I was hoping to hear some tough answers to some tough questions. Instead, we were treated to a one-hour tap dancing display on eggshells as if your primary intent was not to break any eggs." That's kind of what it boiled down to. There was starting to be a lot of opposition, George, even among the Democrats, to the health care plan. So what did Obama do? He went out, he made promises to everyone. He went out to the AARP. He sweetened the deal.
Yeah.
He threw $256 billion. How are we going to pay for that? And then President said that this was going to be a balanced, you know, health care budget, that it was going to pay for itself over time. What's the first thing he did? He says, "Oh, well, this $256 billion doesn't count." What else isn't he counting? It was a cream puff interview. I wish it would take some bloggers or even some callers from the Coast to Coast show, because the questions would have been a lot tougher. You know, what I want to know is, you know, what happens if the odds of success on, let's say, a heart transplant is 30%? Do we still do that or not?
Yeah, it's tough.
What if someone has only 1 or 2 years to live? Do we do that or not? What about fertility treatments, abortion? What about Terry Shaviro? To what extent can doctors, you know, mandate generics? I didn't see any cost mandates in there that are going to hold down costs.
Well, you know, and as the Senate Democrats said to the president today, slow down. You know, he's been in office just since January. He's going way too fast, Mish, on a lot of things, not just health care.
And isn't that the same thing we did under Bush? To be fair, we rushed into the TARP and all of these bailout plans, and we said, "Oh, we have to have these today. We've got to do this." And that if we don't, the GM's going to go bankrupt, and all the remember what Henderson said on GM, that bankruptcy was not an option, that if that the world would fall apart if GM went bankrupt. The world didn't fall apart
It didn't fall apart.
And we talked, how many times did we say that? And that's the problem with rushing into things. Money gets thrown around everywhere. The last time I was on, I think I mentioned this, perhaps not, but we were paving streets. Route 176 goes passed by tens of miles of roads that didn't need to be repaved just because they had this money from the stimulus plan. They had to use it. They had to use it now. Use it or lose it. So they wasted a lot of money. Had we just gone a little bit slower and put this money to where it could have been used, George, it's very aggravating. What can you do?
Misha's website, globaleconomicanalysis.blogspot.com. That's it. Thanks, Mish. Feature story at coasttocoastam.com, right there on the website. A Chinese couple got married wearing clothes made of thousands of living bees. You can see them all over them. Both enthusiastic beekeepers. They work for the Forestry Commission. Despite the fact that most of their pals kept their distance, the couple very delighted with their new clothes. I sure hope they didn't take the bees on the honeymoon. The human body literally glows, emitting a visible light in extremely small quantities at levels that rise and fall with the day, according to scientists. This is what they're now revealing. They say past research has shown that the body emits visible light 1,000 times less intense than the levels to which our naked eyes are sensitive. In fact, virtually all living creatures emit, they say, very weak light. Well, do they know anything about auras? That's probably what these are. Nikola Tesla would have been proud. A system that can deliver power to devices without the need for wires has been shown at a high-tech conference in the United Kingdom. The technique exploits simple physics and can be used to charge a range of electronic devices. The chief executive of the company that is working on this, called Y-tricity, showed mobile phones and televisions charging wirelessly. He said the system could replace the miles of extensive power cables and billions of disposable batteries. How about that? Got to tell you something. A couple months ago, I was at a conference, Conspiracy Con, put on by Brian Hall, and you know, a number of speakers were getting up on stage. One person came up on stage and pulled out his cell phone and held it to the microphone and said, "I want you to hear someone." And this individual came on, and it was a fascinating story, a story we're going to share with you in just a moment, and I'll explain why. Just try to imagine for a moment. The ultimate home production power plant, heating your water, generating electricity, taking care of heating and air conditioning, and also a source that can drive your car on water as well. We're going to be talking with the inventor, but it's a very strange story, one of the most strangest stories I've ever heard. And that's next on Coast to Coast AM. I'm going to introduce you to an inventor. His name's Paul Pantone. He was born in Detroit, Michigan, like I was, began inventing as a child, like I didn't. Paul built several inventions in his teens, also built a number of handy tools. And during the energy crisis of the 1970s, Paul became concerned with the high price of oil and started searching for a solution. In 1983, Paul created his very first working what he calls GEET engine, which stands for Global Environmental Energy Technology. And then all of a sudden, his life fell apart, and we're going to talk with him about that and where things are now. Here is Paul Pantone. Paul, welcome to Coast to Coast.
Thank you very much, George.
My pleasure. I did have a fascinating moment when I was at this conference, and a friend of yours came up on stage and held up the phone, cell phone, and you were on the other end talking to the audience, all of us, and that was at that moment. I had heard a little bit about your technology, did not know you specifically, and I turned to producer Tom and said, you know what, when Paul is ready to talk, let's get him on the program, and here you are. Let's go back for a little bit, Paul, even before the problem started for you. Tell me about the technology that you invented.
Well, trying to get better mileage, I built model after model out there in Garden Valley, California, trying to just come up with something to get better mileage and clean exhaust. And I came across probably 25 to 30 different things that worked, but none of them made me happy. There were only 10, 20, 30% increases. And then finally, after 4 years of it, I came up with one model that I could put anything in the fuel tank, crude oil, paint thinner, cleaning solvent, anything I wanted to use for fuel became fuel, and I had zero pollution.
It was clean.
I took it to a certified smog station in Sacramento, and during one of the runs, running on crude oil with about 80% water in it, we had 2.5% more oxygen coming out the tailpipe than there was in the room. And this shop, just a mile from the Capitol there was more hydrocarbon in the air than there was coming out the tailpipe.
So somewhere along the line, you decided to take this technology and let's try to build a company around it. Let's try to get this out into the hands of Americans and let's see what happens. So what did you do? You formed a corporation.
Well, no, years later I did that. But to begin with, I was so happy with myself. I just knew that people would accept the technology. So I tried to show it to as many people as I could. I got a hold of Greenpeace, Sierra Club, Wilderness Club, all the organizations out there that I could. I said, don't you want clean air? I mean, it works. Look at it. And they kept saying, no. Why? They said, well, we want donations. Solutions put us out of business.
And that's so true.
Yeah, well, it broke my heart. I mean, here I am trying to help mankind clean up the planet, and all I get is kicked.
So now, what happened? How did the problem start for you?
Well, it's real easy. Try to imagine yourself. Let's say you've got just a few hundred thousand in the bank, but you see some young guy pull up, and he pulls an engine out and has no pollution. You're going to see dollar signs.
Absolutely.
And you want to take over. And before you know it, you've got every single guy out there with 2 cents in his pocket trying to take it over. Everybody knows how to market. And they all think, well, you can go to GM and Ford and Chrysler. I mean, the oil companies will even buy it.
Gosh, we've heard stories, Paul, that people had incredible technology. They sold it. and nobody ever heard from the technology again. And in some cases, nobody heard from the person again. He just disappeared. So in your case, you found people, they started throwing money your way to build this business, and they wanted it. They wanted the equipment. They wanted the technology. But they wanted you out of the way, didn't they?
No, they wanted to own me. They wanted to put me in a box where they could control every invention I have. I don't have just one or two. I've got 500 inventions. They didn't want just DEET. They wanted all of it. When they realized they couldn't control me, then some of them tried to drum up false charges. And they said I stole money from them. They invested in me. One guy who had rent coming, rent for 1 month in his building, he said, well, this man owes me the technology.
All right. So at this point, now what happens? You don't go to jail. Instead, you go to a Utah mental ward.
They put me in the nut house saying, hey, guy, if you're not going to get along with your attorney and sign the patent over, then something must be mentally wrong with you. So let's take you in for observation. And 3.5 years later, I come out with 2 messed up feet that need surgery, damaged back. I've lost all my teeth. I'm not in too good a shape.
Yet you have a core of supporters out there, Paul. You have some people who care about you,
yes.
And they never gave up, did they?
No, my son was the hardest pusher from out of the country because he realized that the people in this country that were fighting to help me were hitting the same obstacles one after another. But when he started hitting them from Europe and he started putting up YouTubes with pictures of my broken foot and my broken teeth, they were listening. Because they couldn't fight him. They couldn't just threaten to pull his website down because it was a foreign website. So that was when they finally started listening. And through George, the man who you met there in area, he helped by getting a hold of Senator Butters and other people. And before you know it, the pressure was on that hospital to get me out of there because what they were doing in torture to me and the other patients was becoming public.
So now you're out. And you're ready to run with this technology again?
Well, no, I don't want to make that mistake again. we're setting up, I'm going to be teaching 4 classes here in Oklahoma where I'm at.
All right.
That's it. I'm closing my doors in the United States after that.
Well, what's going to happen to the technology?
Well, my son will be running it over in Europe with his friends and his people running the GEET International Institute of Europe. We'll probably be opening real soon in Australia, the GEET International Institute of Australia. And we're going to be opening in foreign countries.
What a shame that here you are in your own country. They haven't opened their arms to you to try to experiment with this kind of technology.
Oh, it gets better, though, George. That's why I said I really wanted to get on your show. Because as of right now, today, you can go to our website, which my son has set up in Europe. It's geet.nl.
G-E-E-T.nl. Okay.
And we are giving the large engine plans, which we were selling over 10 years, for $250 each, we're giving them away.
You just want everybody to have them now.
I want everybody in this country to know what our government didn't want them to have, and no corporation was willing to let me put on a vehicle. Every time I tried to put it on a truck or the New York City cab company, all of a sudden I couldn't buy a car. I couldn't buy parts. The truck drivers were told, well, if you put it on your truck, we're going to void your warranty. So no matter what I tried to do, they wanted to be one jump ahead of me. So now let's see them be one jump ahead of me if every single human being on the planet can have a free set of plans that they can put one on one piece of equipment of their choice.
Paul, tell me about you as an inventor. I mean, you've come up with a lot of things. How does this happen? It just flows?
I don't like the way things are done. I see different ways of doing it. I went out and split firewood one time back in about 1975. And after splitting firewood a few times and feeling sore at the end of the day, I took a garage, my gun out of the garage that I used to shoot nails into concrete, a stud gun.
Right.
I modified it with a little wedge and a shaft, and I had a 32 caliber, 25 shot semi-automatic log splitter, which I patented.
You invented the glow in the dark leveler.
Yeah.
Didn't you? Which now you see offshoots of that all over the place.
Yes, I did. It had mine had 27 features. It wasn't just glow in the dark. The bubbles moved around so you could adjust it for different angles. It turned circles for you. It was a measuring tape. It did everything you needed.
Paul, how would you like to take some phone calls from listeners who are fascinated with your technology? You want to do that?
That'd be great.
All right. We'll do that next. We'll open up the phone lines. I mean, he's an incredible person. And again, suppress technology. And so they're going to go to Europe and do it and then give away the plans here. We'll be back. Well, next hour, Linda Godfrey joins us as we talk about this creature apparently running around Wisconsin. Fascinating information. When we come back, let's take your phone calls with inventor Paul Pantone on Coast to Coast AM. Paul, I don't know if you remember the movie Back to the Future or not. I don't know where you were when that was coming out. Do you remember it?
Oh, yeah.
All right. The flux capacitor. That's what it sounds like you've invented, something that novel.
Yeah, it is. They've used that scene from Back to the Future on ABC News a couple of times.
They sure have. They sure have indeed. Now, we're going to take some calls here in just a second. Are you safe? Do you feel physically safe now? I mean, you're out. You've got this technology in your head. You've put it on your plans. Your son has it. Are you safe?
That's a pretty tough one to ask. I'm going to be going to a show this next week, which is on the internet there. It's TeslaTech.info. It's a four-day conference at the end of the month.
Oh, that's the same one Richard Hoagland's going to.
Oh, yeah, okay. I'll be down there, and I'm not going to have guards. I'm not going to have bulletproof vests on. I'm not going to be behind a shield of any kind. I'm not worried about it.
Well, you got, I just want you to know this. You remember that episode when George held the phone up to the microphone, right?
Yes.
You got not a standing ovation, but you got an ovation. People just cheered after you got off the phone. And so you've got a lot of people out there, Paul, who care about you as a person and who care about what you're doing to try to change society.
It takes a lot of people to do it. One man can't do it. And when I'm disabled like this right now, I'll be lucky just to get through the four shows I'm planning right now. I'm looking at 25 students four times, once a month, and 1 week long they'll be here. But when they leave here, they're going to know how to put this on a furnace, a boiler, anything they want for the rest of their lives.
That's fantastic. Let's take some calls here. We'll go west of the Rockies, San Diego we go. Hello, Pam. Welcome to the program. Go ahead, Pam.
Thanks, George. Paul, I'm so sorry all that crummy stuff happened to you at the hospital. I'm just wondering, with your brilliant mind, if you can think of some good way to fix the healthcare system.
That's your next invention, Paul.
Well, I've already turned in complaints, and I'll be filing other legal documents in the near future. But we've asked the CCHR, the Citizens Commission for Human Rights, to step in. Right now, the torture that's going on in some of the hospitals is just horrendous. I went weeks and weeks with pus coming out of my mouth from broken teeth, and they refuse medication. There's no excuse for this. They made me walk on a broken foot. And right now, it's got to have surgery on it again, but... I'm sorry, there's just no excuse.
Nope.
For total negligence.
Give me an overview on the GEET technology, how it worked.
Well, you put fuel, one of the systems, there's as many ways to build it as there are pieces of equipment, but the one basic one that's been on the internet for the last 10 years for free is a small engine. You vaporize the fuel by pulling fresh air down to the bottom of the container and bubbling it through the fuel. You then take that vapor and you feed it up the center of the exhaust pipe in the opposite direction of the exhaust in another pipe. And as it goes through there, there's a heat exchange processor that's happening. The heat exchange is taking all the heat from the exhaust, pulling it back into the new vapor, and causing it to expand and expand and expand to the point where it separates into lighter atomic particles. That new vapor goes to the engine and you get anywhere from 70 to 100% less pollution.
How big would you have to build an engine to run a car, for example, and how fast could you go?
You don't have to change the size of the engine. Every piece of equipment on the planet today, whether it's a furnace, a car, a diesel truck, a locomotive, anything, can be retrofit with this technology. And on a small engine, it could be built smaller than a pack of cigarettes. It doesn't have to be as big as we did it on the internet. The reason we did it with big pipes and fittings was because anybody can go to a hardware store and buy the parts off the shelf. You don't have to have a machine shop.
And just put it together.
And put it together. We've got kids that put it together for $20 and ran it on pickle juice and Mountain Dew.
Greg in Ontario, Canada, on the international line. Hey, Greg, go ahead.
Good morning.
Morning.
Mr. Panton, I think what's happened to you is a tragedy, and I would like to help. I have a newspaper route, and I don't need to worry about the warranty on my vehicle. Would you let me use my vehicle as a test vehicle for your technology and document it?
Well, better than that, you can go right on the website at www.geet.nl, and the plans are up there for free.
And just go ahead and do it.
Yeah, if you want to make a donation, make a donation. If you just want to take the plans and use them, the more of these that are out there, the less chance the government's going to have of stopping it.
Let's go to Clearwater, Florida now, east of the Rockies. Chuck, you're on with Paul Pantone on Coast to Coast. Hi, Paul. And
hello,
hi, Chuck.
Paul.
Yeah.
Hey, how are you doing today? I'm curious as to as to when your classes are. You're giving these classes, you said, 25 students a month?
That's it, here in Oklahoma. And if you'll drop me an email, I'll give you all the details at paul@geet.nl.
And let me spell that again. It's GEET.NL.
Correct.
Simple.
Paul@geet.nl.
Paul, we've heard a lot of talk about inventions that increase your gasoline mileage and things like that. Do they primarily all work?
I tested hundreds of them, and most of them did not work.
Did not work.
No, they did not.
Next up, let's go to Kansas City. Carrie, first-time caller. Hi, Carrie.
Good morning.
Hi.
Paul, I am just really surprised that your particular invention, more people wouldn't be interested in seeing it work. I mean, here we have, I mean, I'm going to call out one particular group is, you know, the environmentalists. I would think that they'd be definitely interested in seeing this as it, you know, makes it such a positive impact on the environment. I mean, what was the major holdup for people not wanting you to push this through?
Most of the different groups have their own agenda of what they're trying to promote. A good example of that was the Department of Transportation in New Jersey invited me back in 1998, and we spent about $15,000 on that trip to bring back a car, a generator, a great big diesel engine converted, with generator. And when the director of the transportation department said, I love the idea, we can make this work, but I'm your new partner.
Yeah, that's right. They want it.
You have a nice day. We packed up and went home, empty-handed.
Why does the GEET reactor need to be pointed north when it's operated the first time?
Well, it doesn't have to be pointed magnetic north. It can be pointed straight up, which is what we call biblical north. But it has the same electrical field that the planet Earth does when it's spinning. So when you're recreating that energy field, you're going to end up with seven different energy fields around it. I have over 150 discoveries right now in science that you will not find in science books.
It's amazing how this flows down. I wonder who you were in a past life.
I've been asked that a lot.
Nikola Tesla. Who knows, huh? You never know. Let's go to Mario, Santa Rosa, California, on the wild card line. Hi, Mario.
Thank you, George, for the conduit. And, Paul, I want to help you get all the publicity you can get. I'm a producer for a media center here locally. We can get a video put together to air on that public broadcast station.
We have a gentleman in Colorado right now. He's trying to find the videotapes he did for a Denver station. And it was a Christian station. They were going to put it on, but their sponsors who assist in putting money up from government agencies and from oil companies and car companies said that if that aired, they would never get another dime and they would have problems. So we do have some footage that is ready to air. If you'd like to get together with me afterwards and put a different video together, I'd love to get immediate, yes. Get a hold of me at paul@geet.nl.
When they hauled you away, Paul, did the technology or any testing of this continue with your son or anybody, or did it all stop?
No, my son continued with Robert Boorman and other people over in Geet, the ecology center there in the Netherlands. There is thousands of people all over France that are putting it on tractors and cars. It's much more popular in Europe, and he was trying to do as much as he could to monitor who is doing what. In the meantime, probably 15 companies opened up bragging about the fact that they were using the Gee technology but weren't paying anything for royalties. They're just doing it.
Have you heard about the car from India that runs on compressed air in France, in those areas?
I've heard of several in France. Yeah, they're great.
Do they work?
Well, yeah, they do.
Gee.
I don't know the exact dollar amounts of pollution made to compress the air to make them run.
Because you need an energy source for that, don't you?
Right.
Let's go to Apache Junction, Arizona. First-time caller, Richard, go ahead.
Yeah, this is Rick. I built the first solar-charged electric motorcycle in the world, and I drive it around here in Apache Junction and East Valley near Phoenix and have a ball riding it, and people always want to know about it, and I'm having similar problems to your guest.
There you go, Paul, another inventor. Same problem.
Yeah.
Well,
nobody wants to put any money into it, and there's a lot of people have interest. But
to talk to you, but get a hold of me after the show at paul@geet.nl. I'm trying to put together all the inventors that I can that have other products that can be combined, or they have standalone products already. The one biggest thing I'm looking for out there, though, is women. I mean, you can't tell me that 99% of everything on this planet is invented by a man. There's got to be women inventors out there.
Lots of them, I'm sure.
They got to get a hold of us. We got to find out who they are and let them be recognized.
How's your health these days now? You coming back to normal?
That was one of the big reasons that I decided to go ahead and make this public right now. My health has improved from getting out of the hospital, but I still need surgery. It's very painful to walk. And it would be nice to have a set of teeth.
You've only been out for 2 months, right?
Yeah.
Not long at all. Corvallis, Oregon. Kurt, west of the Rockies. Go ahead, Kurt.
Good evening, George and Paul. Really, I'm not surprised that the government and some of these agencies are not taking more notice towards your ideas. They did the same thing with my uncle who had an idea who I called you about, George, a couple of months back that I didn't get any information on. But really quick, what do you suggest for the average person? Because I have ideas of my own, and I don't trust any of these people, either like some of these advertisements you see on TV, because they actually didn't do anything, and I spent $6,000 and nothing ever came of it.
I hate to laugh, but I call some of those same companies up myself because I have so many hundreds of ideas. I'd be glad to give some away to people just so they can go make a living making these things. But the problem was when I started calling this inventor, the guy with the wheel that he has rolling down the hill, we called a lot of them up, and I said, how many people have you ever taken money from that have become a success that you think made at least $1 million?
None.
All they are doing is sending you a little kit, charging you money for it, doing a patent search you could do yourself, and they are charging you through the nose, and then they tell you what a great idea is. You know, you send us your idea, and we're going to go see if we can help you market it, but it's going to cost you this much more.
They're making money on the kits, aren't they, Paul?
You got it.
Next up, we'll go to Ontario, Canada, east of the Rockies. Hey, Jim, thanks for calling.
How you doing?
Good.
It's a pleasure to talk to everybody out there in the air, and it's a real honor to talk to on such a subject.
All right, go ahead.
Okay, I've been studying free energy for years, and I've seen many, many patents that have been suppressed literally since, well, for about 100 years, including Tesla's patents, Murray's. And I'd just like to say one of the biggest patents that was ever suppressed was the water power car.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, how it works is... you take, you know, obviously water with electricity in it. It only takes 1.23 volts. And when it passes through the water, it creates hydrogen and oxygen. Everybody knows that. But the secret is to have high-frequency DC pulsed electricity. And also, you can put in the water sodium hydroxide lime. That creates a heck of a lot of hydrogen. It's called Brown's gas.
Ah, okay.
And Brown's gas... you can run an engine all day on it. There's been several people that have ran across the United States on it. The reason why it's all suppressed is because the people in control of the world only care about oil.
Absolutely.
That is
absolutely
the problem. The corruption goes to the highest levels.
Paul, what do you think of this invention or this technology? Would it work?
Well, of course
course it does. What I teach in the classroom, I'm not talking about on the show right now.
That's true.
But that's one way of doing it. I can do it in about 1/100th the area.
And he's right, though. It's the surprise. It's big oil, the control. It's what happened to you.
Correct.
You're living proof.
Yes, I'm very much alive.
All right, we got a little 13-year-old wants to talk with you. Got permission from his parents. Anaheim, California, we go. RJ. Hey, RJ, go ahead. You're on with us.
Hi. I was wondering if the engine that he's talking about could be used on any sort of vehicle, moped, motorcycle, because I'm trying to build my own moped, and I think the cheapest thing for me to use as fuel would be just plain water.
Go ahead, Paul. Take it away.
We have built the little mopeds that we got from China, 49cc, to run on 80% water and 20% gasoline, no oil, and just we run those. We're getting about triple mileage. We are getting about 95% less pollution. The problem is, in most of the mopeds, there isn't enough room for a water tank, so you have to give up the back seat area.
Can you do that, RJ?
No, but you have to use, how much, so is it possible to run it without any gasoline whatsoever?
I cannot teach that anywhere in the United States.
Oh. How old do you have to be to take the classes that you're...
There you go, Paul. Your youngest student.
Well, yeah, there would be. We don't have an age limit on that.
There you go. And also, go to his website at geet.nl.
And if you drop me a line, I will respond to you. Send me an email, and I'll tell you how to put it on that little moped.
It sounds like are you restricted from doing anything in this country?
Nothing verbally, but implied.
But implied.
Yeah, and after the last 3.5 years, implication is fine. I'd rather do it in a foreign country and have it shipped in.
Yeah, I mean, you're not throwing in the towel. You're just saying we're moving all this away.
Well, I'm not throwing in the towel at all.
Okay.
The Americans are still going to be able to buy cars. When the cars come out, they're going to be better and more efficient from Europe and Australia and other countries because this country wouldn't let it happen.
Next up, we'll go to Brick, New Jersey. Claire, you're a first-time caller. Hi, Claire.
Hi.
Thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Hi, my name is Claire. I'm another inventor also, among other things. I've had some going back to 73, but I understand, or I intended to help people, and I understand I've been stolen by the government and used for other purposes. And I, in spite of having worked on matters for the defense of our country, was threatened that the government would kill me if I had evidence of the experimentation that they're doing around here. And in spite of having dealt with presidents and prime ministers and had a plan when the peace negotiations failed in the Middle East in the past, and having professional credentials in multiple directions, ended up being locked up in the loony bin too, and have had broken bones and all kinds of things myself.
Seems like a convenient place to hide people, doesn't it?
Yeah, you have no rights to fight back.
And, oh, no, they won't even let you call a lawyer or anything. And nonetheless, what I'm doing is I'm being electromagnetically bombarded, Paul. And I'm wondering if you can help me in some way, and maybe we can figure out a few other things, because I have a lot of knowledge and information in multiple directions.
Well, he will definitely take your email, Claire.
Yes.
And, Paul, why don't you give that out one more time, please?
Paul at geet.nl.
That's geet.nl. Paul, one, good luck with everything you're doing, and I'm glad you're out. I'm also glad I was at that conference and heard you on the phone.
George, it's been an honor to be on your show. I really appreciate this.
Well, there he is. Paul Pantone put together this technology. They jumped on him. They put him into a mental institution. He was there for 3 years. You just heard some of the things that happened to him. He's out now, and he's ready to roll again. I'll be back in a moment with Linda Godfrey on Coast to Coast AM.